truthfully, what happens is, as children grow up, we start to educate them progressively from the waist up. And then we focus on their heads, and slightly to one side.
I think in the old days, you know, you were better off. Because nowadays, they're all specialists. Everyone's becoming better and better, and less and less. And eventually, someone's going to be superb at nothing.
Our education system has mined our minds in the way that we've strip-mined the earth for a particular commodity. And for the future, it won't serve us. We have to rethink the fundamental principles on which we're educating our children.
We're not here to tell everybody that they're wrong and we're right. We're not saying that we have all the answers, but we'd like to present a different way of looking at it.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to China Jeducation, episode
6.
My name is Heather Domenico, and I am a 6-year-old teacher at QSI International School, Zhuhai.
Yes, Heather, welcome.
Thank you.
And I must apologize because I have very spontaneously got you on here. I did say I would like to have a chat with you, and I guess. I didn't mention that it would be on the podcast.
Yeah, so. That's okay.
Well, I think you've taken it. Many people would have said some obscene words and would have closed the door on
I
us.
I said so. It in my head.
No, it's marvellous. And so it's great to have you here. So you're a grade one teacher.
Yeah, 6-year-old.
Has that been what you've always taught, grade one?
Yeah, mostly. I've done half 5-year-old kindergarten and then half 6-year-old. Yeah. First grade, so just those 2 grades.
And just for the listeners, the noise in the background is Chinese construction. they're building a whole new railway, isn't it, system here that
and
goes
probably
along.
Probably apartments too, it looks like, out the window.
And I've heard that sometimes, and a lot of time through the year, you get the building shake sometimes.
Sometimes. Although not so much anymore. Now we're like, you know, shake free, dynamite free.
Yeah, like light at the end of the tunnel,
as
I say.
It's been about 10 months it's been gone, so that's good.
So, why is it that you like teaching that age group? Is there any specific reason? Have you tried older age groups? What is it that really makes you? Because you're definitely in your element with this age group.
Yeah. I never thought actually I would teach 5 and 6s. Before I became a teacher, I thought, oh, I think I'd like 3rd or 4th grade, a little bit older, more independent. And then throughout my student teaching, I tried lots of grades actually. Not kindergarten or first grade, not the 5 and 6-year-olds. And then I did some middle school and high school, which was super scary and not okay for me.
This is back in the States.
Yeah, back in the States when I was doing my training. That was weird and uncomfortable and I don't know. I don't have their humor there. Yeah. I can't be cool with them. I just am not like that. So then we applied to jobs overseas and I got an offer for the kindergarten, the 5-year-old position. I thought, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into? I don't want to teach kindergarten. But then I started volunteering in some kindergarten classes and doing some substituting in kindergarten. I thought, oh, all right, this will be okay.
So, okay, I see.
And then I came and started teaching 5-year-olds and loved it. And then moved up to 6-year-olds and loved it. And so I've just stayed. This is my happy place. They're cute and nice and they think I'm funny. So.
Yeah, well, they are very cute and nice. And sometimes you are quite funny as well.
Ridiculous.
But, so you're from California and you started doing kindergarten in California?
Just the student teaching and some substitute teaching. But my international experience has been my main only classroom teacher.
And then tell me, how did that happen in terms of wanting to go abroad? You're in America, of course, with your husband.
Yeah.
And where did the whole, was it China or it was just let's get out of here and go and...
Yeah, we love to travel and so we just thought, well, if we could go live overseas, we could travel a whole lot more and that would be cool. And we'd actually kind of decided that before we became teachers. So part of becoming teachers was to move overseas. We thought like, oh, that will be our gateway. We could have a job, we could do something we enjoy and we like and have similar schedules. And so we just had always planned on moving overseas. We never planned on teaching in California. The pay's not good.
Right, yeah.
They're not so great. Yeah. I mean, there's way more kids per class. There's maybe 28 or 30 kids per class. No teaching assistants, long hours, really a lot harder, I think, conditions than in some ways harder than going overseas. So we decided, let's go.
California. I mean, that's a nice place, right?
Yeah, it's nice. But it's really expensive.
If you got the travel bug, you got the travel bug.
Yeah. So the travel bug, anti-America. travel bug. Yeah. You know, we wanted to get out and see the world and see different things. So we applied everywhere. We had no teaching experience. So we just sent out applications, anywhere and everywhere, and just waited and waited and no responses and waited. Because you need teaching experience. Actually, it was School of the Nations in Macau. Contacted us back, and we had a series of interviews, and we said, we better look up where is Macau.
Yeah.
So then we got those jobs, and we moved to Macau. So.
Okay, and how long were you in Macau for?
2 years.
2 years, yeah. In the School of Nations, yeah. In Macau.
And then we thought Macau was too big city, too many, I don't know.
Yeah.
We thought, oh, it's hot, it's humid, we need to get out of here. So we applied with QSI, and they offered us Kazakhstan in Almaty. So we said, yeah, let's go to winter. Winter will be good. You can just dress up warm and not be so hot and sweaty. It'll be great. And then we got there, we had our first winter. We're like, this is awful. We should have stayed in southern China. So ironically, when we put in our transfer, they offered us Zhuhai.
Which, of course, the listeners, is right next to it. It's buffed up by land.
We can't get any
Macau.
Closer. We can see our old home from everywhere, yeah. So, so we came back. We like it.
So, Almaty in Kazakhstan, in the winter, are we talking snow?
Oh, yeah, lots of snow.
Skiing?
Yeah, there's skiing, lots of skiing, beautiful mountains and hiking, yeah. But there is snow, like, October through March with snow flurries still happening in August. I mean, it's ice and snow for 4 to 6 months.
Wow.
It's cold. I mean, it's negative.
Yeah.
Minus 20.
That is cold.
Yeah.
Really cold. If we look at, is it Almaty, right? Is that the capital of Kazakhstan?
Yeah, it's Astana now. It's the previous capital.
If you live in there as an expat, are there lots of other expats that aren't literally in the school, but doing lots of jobs, you know, like we have here, for example, in Zhuhai, lots of people doing lots of different diverse things. Is that the same in...
Yeah, Almaty is the banking capital of Central Asia. And so there's a lot of expats there.
Do you want a lot of suits and ties?
Yeah, lots of suits and ties, lots of new
Well, you can
money.
Wear that in the cold, right?
Yeah, of course, no problem.
Okay.
Yeah, so there was quite a few foreign expats there.
So now you're in Zhuhai. Compare between Macau and Zhuhai. Are you happier in Zhuhai to Macau? Right next to each other, of course. Very different places.
Yeah, different. They are very different. It's surprising. Yeah. No, we love Zhuhai. We love Zhuhai. We way prefer living in Zhuhai than we did to Macau. I think people are friendlier in Zhuhai, and it's more open. There's more green spaces. It's cleaner.
You know, I often say that we should often say to the Zhuhai Tourism Board that they should listen to these podcasts, because the amount of people that big up Zhuhai is amazing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Oh, I think it's the best place probably to live in China, especially if you don't want a huge city. I mean, it's not a huge city. It's nice. It's compact. It's clean. You can do lots of stuff.
Wonderful.
Close to Macau, close to Hong Kong, so you can go over there if you want, but... I don't know, it's our sleepier area.
And I have to say, and also to listeners, you are a super organized person. And the fact, I never knew that you actually organize yourself to become a teacher so you could then go and travel around the world. I mean, that's just wonderful. But it's taken me many years in myself to realize that, because, you know, being from England and speaking English, and you just kind of don't think, I don't know, teaching, I'm wrong when I say this to people listening to this now, but you kind of think that teaching, and especially teaching English, is kind of like, you know, it's a second-rate job for someone who has a native background in English. You kind of think you should challenge yourself more. But actually, the years that have gone by, if you want something stable, especially when you start to have children as well, if you're abroad and international schools will be very expensive, if you want something to travel with, and actually if you want something that's actually really quite fulfilling, then teaching really is a great kind of job to do.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's the other misunderstanding is that there are two different types of teaching overseas. There are jobs where you're teaching English only, where you don't have the same students all the time, and it's classes and rotational. And then there's the international schools. And so when we're working at international school, I always tell people, and I'm not really teaching English, I'm just a
teacher.
That's
very true, yeah.
I'm teaching reading, and I'm teaching writing, and I'm teaching math and science and cultural studies, and the kids have a traditional American kind of experience with education here, the way that this day is run, and I don't feel like I'm any less of a teacher or any different than a teacher would be in America, except that I'm very, very fortunate to have an awesome assistant with me all day, and to have small class sizes, and to have resources. So I think really, I think it's the best place to be teaching.
Well, I think there's some really good points you make there. And in your teaching assistant, your power pro, Elke, is over. Can you say hello quickly, Elke?
Hello.
There you go, in the background. And Mrs. Domenico is getting her to do lots of work for her while she records podcasts. So back onto that. Do you think you'll go back to America, or your plans are to stay teaching? That's probably quite a difficult question, isn't it?
We have no plans to go back now. We go visit every summer, and that's good. I think for us, the benefits of living overseas are outweighing the benefits of going back to America. I mean, financially, socially, we do have a child, a young child, and what we want him to grow up in and the people he's surrounded by. We miss our friends and our family, and of course we would want him to be closer to those people, and that's really the draw, or the idea if we were going to go back would be to be closer to them. But I don't know. The rest we could leave.
there's some important points to make here. Number one is your young boy, 3 years old, is in the same class as my second oldest boy, Jasper. Yeah. Of course, your son bit Jasper yesterday on the finger. Jasper bit Sawyer on the finger, and then Sawyer bit him today, we heard. Spontaneously, so there's that. And then, of course, you have a sister who's been living in Bali for many years and is about to get married to a Balinese local man.
Right.
So kind of the Asia magnet is strong, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. It is interesting. I'm the oldest of four children, and we all were born and raised in California, but now half of us are living in Asia, and the other are living in America, and so...
Well, may it continue, Mrs. Domenico.
Yeah.
So let's talk about you in terms of your education then. Take us back when you were a little girl. You're in California.
Yeah.
Yeah? So where did you go to school? Did you stay in one school? Small school, big school? Yeah, tell us.
So I started school in Oakland, California, which is just outside of San Francisco, and the city, and the ghetto, we would call it. So I think it was...
They have a ghetto in San Francisco.
Yeah. Well, it's Oakland. Maybe the whole city is the ghetto, I'm not sure. No, there's nice parts of Oakland. So we lived there until I went to second grade, and then my parents decided they needed to get us out of the city, so we moved to a small town, Grass Valley. It's in the countryside. And I went to a kindergarten, so like a 5-year-old through 12-year-old school, 13-year-old school, K through 8. And it was only 100 kids.
Oh, wow.
So my class was maybe 17 kids. It was the biggest class in the school, and those were my friends all the way through until I was in 8th grade. And then we split off, and there's two large high schools. So then I went to a larger high school.
Grass Valley?
Yeah, in Grass Valley with about 1,000 kids. I wasn't the best student. Well, I don't know. I was okay. I thought social events were more important than homework at some point. But I didn't go to college right after. So I started working instead. I graduated high school. Everything was fine.
And then you went to college after?
I didn't go to college until I was 26.
Okay. And that was also in California?
Yeah. So that was also in California. So I went to a community college called Sierra College.
Okay.
And then 2 years there, and then went to Sacramento State College for my bachelor's degree, and then graduated there, and then went to a 1-year teaching credential program at Brandman University to get my teaching license. It was about 4 years of work.
Yeah, the degree. So did you know then when you went to do the bachelor's, what was it, in education?
Or? Yeah, it was in education. So the whole time I knew I was going to be a teacher.
Yeah.
I decided to be a teacher and went.
Wonderful.
California.
Did you enjoy school?
As an adult, yes. Mostly as an adult, yes. Because, I don't know, because I cared.
So when you say as an adult, so what about when you were...
I didn't care for school so much in high school. The teenager thing, you want to just go out and have fun. Right. And so school was fine to meet friends and to socialize, but it wasn't like, oh, I'd love to learn, I want to be so smart.
Yeah.
I didn't have that feeling. In elementary school, I really enjoyed school too. I had good teachers. And
I love school. I wish I could go back.
Yeah, I know. Looking back on it. Well, you can. Now you're going to be a teacher.
Well, that's another
You get to go back. Point. Maybe that's why I like teaching 5- and 6-year-olds so much. It is fun. I get to just have fun all day.
Yeah, you're absolutely
teach
right.
Teach and learn and do, activities.
What should we do today? Let's play a game.
Yeah. Make blood, make bones. I don't know. We're learning about the body. Let's do it.
There's something funny I was going to say then, but probably wasn't funny. But forget that. So, favorite teacher?
Favorite teacher.
Is there someone who just comes out straight away that you've grown up.
Yeah, I always think of my teacher, Mr. Lay, and he's now like the big head honcho in our district.
He runs
all the schools in the city. He was a brand new teacher when he came to Clear Creek Elementary. And,
Mr. Lay.
Yeah, Mr. Lay. And just like a young, I don't know, he must have been in his early 20s. We thought he was old then, but now I think back, he probably wasn't old, very old at all. He was probably in his early 20s. So just a really nice guy, new to teaching. He always taught math and science, and I was awful at math, but he always took the time to sit down and talk it through and show you different ways to do it. It was nice and funny, and so I always think of him and think, Mr. Lay, he's a good teacher.
That's nice.
Yeah. I messaged him recently, actually, when I was telling my class, because they were saying, math is so hard, I don't like it. I said, no, you just have to try harder. I'll just keep teaching you and showing you. I said, just like my teacher, Mr. Lay, did. So I sent him a message.
Oh, really?
He said, hey, I'm in China, and I'm teaching, and I was just telling my kids about you. And he wrote back and said, that's so awesome.
That's great.
Even so many years later, I mean, really, it's been a lot of years.
Wow.
It's been like 23 years, so.
Well, Mr. Lay, if you're listening, which I hope you're going to be, well done for that. So you can send in the podcast link.
Yeah. You're famous in China.
Yeah. So in terms of like, because obviously you're a grade room, so you're a homeroom teacher. Yeah. So you teach math, language arts, reading, writing, course being there. Cultural studies. What's your favorite swing with that? Or do you like it all?
I like reading, teaching reading a lot and writing. You see such big gains at this young of age where they can
they don't know
their letter sounds or anything, and really they can just learn a lot and absorb a lot, and you can get them to be reading, and you see the pride and that they take in their accomplishments.
Yeah,
I love it.
I mean, go back to your organization skill. Yeah. Because obviously I worked with you for a bit when I was doing my teacher training, which was fantastic. But you're very organized in the mornings when you do your language arts. You have the different bench stations, which the children put into their different differentiated level groups of reading will move around and revolve around in. And I just think that's a really cool way of teaching instead of that traditional Mr. Menico just stands at the front and all of them listen. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know, they work in their own.
I think
groups.
That's the old school way now.
Yeah.
Well, we hope it is.
Yeah. Which, of course, I mean, I don't know about you, but I grew up in that kind of
mostly
old school
way. I did too as well.
Okay, excellent. So style-wise, as a teacher, Miss D, what do you reckon? What's your teaching style?
What's my teaching style? Well,
it's like an interview.
Maybe,
it's
I don't know. What is my teaching style? Crazy? No, I don't know.
Crazy,
crazy teaching style? No, I get bored myself easily, so I don't want the kids to get bored. So I do a lot of games and activities and creating a lot of the kids to do fun things. So teach the material, practice the material, and then go out and play board games with it. I mean, we have Candyland, and instead of the traditional Candyland cards, they're sight words or they're math problems. And so, I don't know, I try and have fun and do a lot of hands-on stuff. Mm. I mean, even at 5 and 6, they need to be building things and making things and touching things. And so, I'm always trying to find new ways to engage them and to teach them something in a way that they'll learn, then they'll remember, not just fill in a bubble or, you know, write something and be done with the answer. So really try and, I don't know, internalize the answer. So my style, I don't know, I have all kinds of things all over my room.
You do. I mean, I'm just looking around at the wall and it's packed, listeners.
Yeah, it's a little bit packed,
with
a little crazy.
Words and sentences and pictures and, I mean, you could say it's a mess, but actually it's not. It's actually a very nice, used, warm...
Now this is when I want the video for the podcast, because, you know, everyone's imagining a mess.
Yeah. So,
I don't see a mess, but...
No, it's an organized...
Yeah.
That's the wrong word. I take that back. It's not a mess. It's like a clutter of different things.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
When you look at it, you almost have to focus in to see what's going on, and only you and the students will probably know exactly where the where the things are. But it's really lovely. Yeah, turtle tooth tent they umbrella under upstairs. Marvelous. Now, kids at this age, of course, beautiful as they are, they can sometimes be a little bit of a problem when it comes to keeping them maybe in order or focused, discipline wise. Yeah. Do you have any special tips or techniques that you use to keep a load of 6 to 7 year olds
kind of on task?
On task's the word,
At the beginning of the year, we spend a lot of time talking about how to be a good student and how to be a good friend and practicing, and yeah. I model and they show and we rehearse over and over and over. And they know the rules. Even today, still, we have a little microphone and they recite the 5 rules of the classroom every morning.
You still do that?
Oh, yeah, every day, all year. It's one of the jobs.
It's become an honor for them now. Oh, it's one of the jobs.
Yeah, they love to be the kid who gets to hold the microphone and say, rule number one, yes. Listen when someone is speaking. Yeah, so they love all that. So we do that, but if they get, you know, too squirrely, they know that there's 5 consequences, and if I ask them to do something one time, yeah. That's the warning. And if they do it again, or they don't do whatever it is again, then they get to choose their own consequence.
Okay.
So they have 5 consequences. They can lose a sticker, because they earn stickers for good behavior, so they have to rip a sticker off their notebook, which is surprisingly traumatic.
Traumatic.
Oh, yeah. And I throw it in the trash can, and we talk about it. So that's one. Lose a sticker. 5 minutes on the thinking chair, which hasn't been a thing this year.
Okay.
They haven't even had a thinking chair, because they just don't choose that. So, I mean, the kids that don't choose often, but that.
Yeah.
Number 3 is...
Of course, you'll find it hard to remember because your kids are so well behaved now, I suppose.
Well, yeah, and they get to choose the consequence. They don't want to choose a consequence. One of them is lose the classroom job. Can you imagine if you're the rule reciter and you have to choose that as your consequence and you don't get to be the one who holds the microphone?
Yes.
It's traumatic. Yeah. That's as bad as ripping a sticker off.
No, and I can see now you've got pegs on the for the classroom jobs. You've got a line leader, teacher's assistant, not pet. So what's the microphone reader then?
That's the rule reciter. Yeah, rule reciter. And there's calendar helper and pet feeder. You know, we've got the hamster. Imagine if your day was to feed the hamster and you had to choose that as a consequence not to do it. Because, you know, there's... How many kids are there? There's 11. So they only get to do their job once every 2 weeks.
But it's quite funny though, because when you're older, you want to try and not do jobs.
Right.
But when you're young, you want to do jobs.
Begging.
Yeah. It's funny how it all flips.
Yeah, so positive reinforcement and positive motivation, I think, is the best thing. Especially with this age. Because kids want to make you happy. They don't want to be in trouble. They don't want to make people sad or, you know, not like them. They want to do their best. You just have to give them the right environment to do that.
Totally and utterly agree. So, what's unique about your classroom, Mrs. Domenico?
Oh, what is unique about it?
Got anything unique? Yeah. Anything you think? Hey, that's because you are quite. I have often
the hamster.
I thought it died and passed away.
Well, this is the hamster number 3.
Oh, reincarnated at Easter, did it?
We've had Cupid, Lemonade, this is Cutie, and Cutie's the best because
hang on. You've gone through 3 hamsters already.
Oh, yeah. Well, the first one escaped, and we didn't tell the cleaners at the school that it had escaped soon enough, and they smashed it.
They thought it was a mouse.
Yeah, they thought it was a mouse. So we just told the kids that, you know, Cupid escaped, he's on the grand adventure, let's write a story.
Yes.
So they don't know about that. Lemonade just disappeared. And now Cutie disappears quite often, but she always hides behind the air conditioning at night. She doesn't go under the door. So she gets to have big adventures in the classroom at night when we don't lock her up properly, but she still stays. So, I don't know.
I'll tell you what, if I ever go on holiday and I need to leave my pet with someone, I'm not going to be calling you up.
No, don't.
That's certainly something that's very unique. You've managed to send a couple of hamsters to heaven, and you're working on the next one.
Yep. Yeah. Before summer, hopefully. Who's going to watch it over summer?
Well, there you go. Any listeners that wants to watch a hamster
for the nice. Listeners. It's nice. It won't bite.
Okay. So apart from the hamsters and keeping them alive, what's been your biggest challenge so far? Let's stick with China, teaching in China. Is this your second... That's your third year here, isn't
it? Will be my third year next year.
Okay, so your second
Macau,
year.
Macau, 2 years. Kazakhstan, two years.
2 years, yeah.
I think probably the biggest challenge here is... most of the school children are Chinese, and they come here to learn English, and they all want to speak Chinese all the time.
Yeah.
If you would let them, they would just speak Chinese all the time. And so I think as a teacher, one of my biggest challenges has been encouraging them to speak English and keep telling them, speak English, please, speak English, please. I mean, there are times where speaking Chinese in class is okay. I mean, to help translate and to figure out words, but just to turn to your neighbor who's also an English speaker and then speak in Chinese, like, you guys, stop it. So that's probably the biggest challenge, is just trying to encourage kids speaking English. Besides my biggest challenge is not speaking Chinese. Ironically, I would love if they would all speak Chinese, because then maybe I would learn more Chinese.
See, it's cash 22, isn't it?
It is.
Because I always want my son to speak more Chinese. Right. And then,
oh, mine as well.
He's been told off for speaking Chinese. Right. It's this international problem.
I always joke with them, if you're going to speak Chinese, you need to teach me what you're saying. And they're like, oh, but you don't say anything right. I'm like, I know, so speak in English.
Well, learning the language, of course, marvelously difficult, especially Chinese.
Yeah.
But there's any time to do it, it's now.
It's now, Dwayne.
Okay, well, there you go. Wonderful. So, as we finish, we've got to have a teacher's tip. A recipe for success if you want to compete. What would it be then, Miss D?
My biggest tip to teachers is to over-communicate with families and parents. I do...
Oh,
over-communicate. Really, just tell them everything. Lots of stuff you don't even think you want them to know. But they need to know. Just tell them.
Now, that's interesting, because a lot of teachers I spoke to would be... Communication is difficult because obviously a lot of Chinese parents don't speak English.
Yeah.
So generally, the assistant or someone else deals with that. But you're actually directly... How does that work? You have a WeChat?
Well, WeChat translates everything. You know, I mean, it might be a bad translation.
Oh, it's good enough, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good enough. It really is. I communicate on a weekly basis for sure with all the parents in my class, Chinese speaking or not. So if there's things that we need to make sure are clearly communicated, then I ask Elke to message or to talk with them and to help. But otherwise, no, I do all of my own communication with them. And I send a newsletter out on Mondays, English, Chinese, both versions. I mean... It's not so hard.
Do you...
Surprisingly, since I don't speak Chinese.
So you send a newsletter out. Okay, and that'll have bits of what you're going to be doing this week.
Yes, yeah, list for every subject, what the kids are learning with me.
And you put it into Chinese as well, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then, did like the parents try and like PM you or anything, like personally message you? Do you keep it all in the group kind of?
I have the group, the class group, where we share information and share pictures and things that everybody needs to know. And then I have groups with all the different parents. I just have parent groups that I message directly. I mean, I send pictures of math tests, time math tests every day, and flashcards and what each kid needs to do. So.
Wow. But you'll never individually speak to parents. You keep it all in the...
No, I individually speak with all the parents.
Oh, well, so you do.
Yeah,
wow,
so I have a group chat for everything that applies to everyone, and then I have individual parent groups that apply for each child.
I think that's very unique. Well done for that. I think some people would say, once you start doing that, you obviously have to keep doing that.
But don't you want to?
Well, I was going
to
say, wouldn't you want to? Yeah.
You want to. As a parent now, especially, if you know what's going on in the class and you don't have to ask questions and you don't get that little bubbly like, why don't I know that my kid got
bit today? Stop the unknown. Well, I think that's a great tip. Certainly something I'm going to take on board.
Well, it makes teachers and parents happier. I mean, it makes everybody happy. Nobody's feeling like they don't know what's going on or they're not communicating. And then you have a good relationship with parents, which... You need it. It's important.
Yeah. Sounds cheesy, but communication is key.
Oh, it is.
Right, you've got a class to teach. Wonderful to have you on, Chinese Education, and we'll catch up soon.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, bye.
If you enjoy listening to the China Jedi podcast and want to get involved, either by asking a question, expressing your opinion, good or bad, light or dark, or even appearing as a special guest, then get in touch by emailing our team at info@chinajedi.com. That's info@chinajedi.com.
May the smile be with you.